And hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Unfiltered Finance with Ron and John, where two old friends, one on the legal side, one on the finance business side, decided the world needs to hear their voices. So we get to interview some really amazing people. Today, we're here with Natalia, the founder of Proppy, who is revolutionizing not just tokenized real estate, but I think real estate in general. But first, I will wait until my partner in crime comes back because we've just lost Ron. There he is. Sorry. There he is. Ron likes to be mysterious.
Hard to pin me down.
So quick background on the two of us. My name is John D'Agostino. I'm head of strategy at Coinbase Institutional. Most of my career is on the alternative asset side, commodities, and now these days, cryptocurrency. Ron, you want to tell our audience who you are?
Sure. My name is Ron Geffner. I'm a founding partner of Sadis & Goldberg, a law firm in Midtown Manhattan. I started my career at the SEC, where I used to prosecute money managers, and it's been a fun ride ever since then. My focus is mostly private funds, hedge fund, private equity, venture capital, and it seems like all things to do with alternative.
And like me, Ron, the last couple of years, your world has sort of been consumed by blockchain and digital assets. And increasingly the intersection of artificial intelligence and digital assets. So we're thrilled to welcome Natalia. Natalia, you and I go back. We've spoken at conferences together, and I've seen pretty extraordinary growth out of Proppy over the last, I'd say, 18 months specifically. So walk us through what Proppy is, why it's different, why this tokenization effort is valuable. When so many others, quite frankly, don't build tremendous value. And then maybe I want to hear, like, what's been happening over the last, like, 6 to 12 months that I'm hearing so much about what you're doing.
Thank you, John and Ron. So great to see you. And thank you for having me today on this podcast. I'm thrilled to be here in the end of the year at 2025, which has been a phenomenal year for the crypto industry in terms of regulation changes and overall the industries, the legacy industries such as real estate, accepting finally the status quo of stable coins and digital assets. So in brief words, Proppy is this technology company that has the mission to automate the real estate transaction process. We believe real estate is the last largest asset class that has not been innovated. And now with the digital asset rails, blockchain rails, and AI rails, finally, this asset could be programmable, liquid, and truly digital, because by nature, it is a digital asset. We never move the walls. It's impossible to steal this physical asset. But when it comes to ownership, it's just a record. So that's why I'm so thrilled to work in the space. It's been about 8 years. But in the last 6 to 10 months, John, I would say, since we last connected and we had this interview where you interviewed me at the Miami Summit, mm-hmm. I think through the biggest Coinbase efforts that we had, where we had escrow accounts and escrow deals for cryptocurrencies, where we use Coinbase as a custody solution. Afterwards, where we really focused our efforts has been AI innovation, because the digital asset, the settlement protocol, really needs data. And in order for our escrow officers to collect data, it's almost impossible to build all those integrations.
Why do escrow officers, I understand what valuation companies would need data. Why do escrow officers need data?
Because the real estate transaction that today takes about 30 days is all about chasing data about the contingencies and the terms in the purchase agreement. So you need data on taxes, you need data on inspections, on the condition of the property, on the payments, whether the payment is executed or not.
Okay. So HOA, not big data. Sorry, mortgages, not big. It doesn't need,
not big.
Your LLMs, so these are spearfishing targeted data sources that could exist in multiple different formats and some on PDFs and some in people's minds. Okay, got it. So it's a data aggregation exercise, not a, when you said it needs data, I thought immediately
You're
LLM,
talking
large
about
data
creating
models. Okay.
original data, like
Got
as
it.
opposed to recordable data, John? That was a
Okay.
concern.
Understood. How to track all this stuff down. Okay. And then verify it, I'm assuming, not entirely. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the biggest news of this year is that we launched our AI agent Avery, and she's helping, co-piloting, and will be replacing escrow officers, where she actually chases for this data. She calls lenders, she calls HOAs on behalf of our escrow team, and collects this data because the industry is so fragmented, it has been impossible to integrate all those systems, so we get the data per each transaction. So that has been fascinating. And then the second big news is that we launched a $100 million roll-up strategy, where we are acquiring existing legacy businesses, title companies that are profitable, and then we bring our technology and make all those entities more profitable, more efficient, with a goal to get a critical market share in this title business and really rewire the whole real estate transaction.
What was a light bulb moment that caused you to set down the path of creating Proppy?
Well, that's a great question. First, I've been a real estate developer in my past life and a software engineer. So I think the light bulb was immediately just seeing that everything has been touched by technology. Transportation changed, hospitality changed, internet transformed all those industries, but not real estate. And obviously, my passion has been in technology and real estate. So I thought, oh, that would be a huge, huge idea to make real estate tradable globally. And of course, it would take years and decades to achieve that, but I just decided to jump on this and dedicate my life and career to accomplish this. And then the second aha moment was when I learned about smart contracts. I remember this day, remember the reading several books, and it was just the aha moment how I will do it.
So, whenever you're trying to implement these type of large scale enterprise changes to large systems, and I remember doing this with the NYMEX years ago, there's technical barriers, right? There's real technical barriers, right? It's not everything can be easily digitized, right? But maybe you have to consider, okay, well, Avery's running around collecting data, but is Avery scrutinizing the data? Does Avery have the ability to discern good data from bad data if we have bad actors in the system? So there are real technical issues. But then the more interesting thing to me is they're the human impediments, right? There's the people who are concerned about their jobs being gone. There's people who just simply don't want to change. Even younger participants in the system who would benefit from this decreased friction, like kind of frustratingly fight against it because we don't like to learn new things. So I guess educate us a bit. Like, what are the big human barriers? Like, who are the players in this ecosystem? Because I remember I just bought a condo and renovated it here in New York. It was like 50 people involved. I remember, and the closings have gotten simpler. Like you don't have to attend, your lawyer attends the closings now from the last time I bought it. But he called me from the closing and showed like a photo. And there was still like 12 people in the room, which I blows my mind. So who are the main constituents that are reticent to change, which is why we haven't seen real estate evolve in 50 years?
Well, first of all, congrats on your home purchase. And the main, I think to your point, there are older and younger generation that don't want to lose their job and they are kind of married to status quo. It's all about the awareness and education. Obviously, we were too early implementing blockchain. So the first years were all about just going to a number of brokerages, executive meetings, and title companies, and educating legislators that blockchain is good. It's a good system to trace record, to have immutable evidence of one transaction being recorded. Luckily, it's not the case now, but it's a huge industry. The real estate industry is a $400 trillion industry. The title business alone is a $25 billion industry in the United States, and it's a licensed business. So obviously, those bigger players that own the significant market share, they would oppose. But I have not met yet one kind of big enemy of innovation. It's just the fear of multiple parties, or sometimes it's just I'm not sure if it's a laziness or not prioritization of implementing AI and blockchain in real estate that is coming from, let's say, brokerage owners, just because they are chasing for the next deal. They're not thinking about, well, it's time for change. All the industries have been transformed, but not this one.
Well, I think a lot of times it might be there's a thesis that people have, especially as they age, if it ain't broken, don't fix it. And people don't realize that it's broken and that anything that can be replaced by technology will be replaced by technology. So it's a question of if you see it on the horizon or you don't. I think that's part of just the human condition. We tend to
I
grow
agree.
most through conflict. Then when things are going good, people don't ask questions like, why is this going good? What do I need to do? So it's usually they negotiate when a weaker position, when things are not going well.
I agree. And to some extent, building a technology or building innovation is not really inventing the pill against the pain. In the past, people were okay with taxes. They didn't know that something better could exist. They were okay with transferring money without Bitcoin, right, from one account to another, or horse carriage, right? But there are people who are seeing the future, seeing that there is a better outcome for the industry, such as in real estate. I believe it will affect the housing affordability. So when you're
When you
passionate
get, by the way,
about
when you get a chance, let's go back to the housing affordability, if John's okay with that as a subject, because affordability is a new political buzzword, but sort of
Yeah,
invented.
I'd like to tell you, I'd
Yeah.
love to understand how does Proppy, two things you said. How does Proppy or this technology potentially help with housing affordability? I'd also like to go back to the claim you made earlier where I think you said it'll improve liquidity. And I'd love to dive a little deeper into that. Why would decreasing the friction associated with this with a transaction necessarily create more liquidity, like say in my condo here in New York?
I think the liquidity question as well as the housing affordability are very interconnected,
Okay.
in a sense of a real estate transaction being very expensive, where Americans don't even realize it. In the majority of other countries, recording and transfer of ownership is built in a different way and cheaper. In America, we're losing about 10% of the home value every time we transact.
That's about right.
It's
Brokerage
like
fees, you're counting brokerage fees and everything?
everything. When we
Yeah,
transact,
that's exactly what it
yes.
is. I remember my spreadsheet when I was selling my place, I put it about 9.7% as of off the gross price as what the fees would be. Exactly. Couldn't agree more. Yep.
Yeah, 9.7%. Here you go. Here is
Yeah.
a recent example. And it's because the complexity adds to every single fee. Because the transfer of ownership in America is so complicated. First of all, it's a fragmented registry with 3,000 counties, unlike one registry that is centralized. Then you don't record the whole conveyance data there. Then the brokerages have a lot of hard time to actually track those 30 days of closing. So obviously they have those high commissions because of too much work. But imagine if the closing is simpler. If it's simple and faster and all the data flows in, then all the parties in the transaction process will charge less and less and less, but they will make more money because then the liquidity would increase. Because every time you
Yeah.
add 10% to the home value, then on the next transaction, 10 more, 10 more, obviously it compounds and it
Yep.
affects the housing pricing in a long-term horizon. So that's how it affects the housing affordability.
Yeah.
Americans are trying to save for 10, 5 to 10% for the down payment their entire life, And then it's being eaten by all those fees.
Look, that's a great point. I hadn't thought about it that way because in my mind I'm like, well, these are like these are unique purchases, right? Your house is very special. It represents, I think, for most Americans, the majority of their net worth. But I was thinking about it, and I'm like, as you were speaking, I was like, well, they could go buy a stock for that exact same amount of money, and the transaction would clear in T plus one and would take 5 seconds online, right? So it's not the amount isn't the issue. We generally buy larger amounts of value transfer in seconds. Like, why does a house
Exactly.
need to be this drawn out? That's a fair point.
I guess
Yeah, do
I
you?
think,
Yeah.
John, sorry to interrupt, you and I probably presumed there was a static component that wouldn't be changed, and that's why people have accepted it as a part of Natalia's mission might be to also change people's perspective that there's a need for this, right? It's goes back to the question of, do we appeal to consumers, or we try and create consumers, and where is the division of that separation?
Todd, what do you think? How do you get people to change a system they've been using for 20, 30 years, they saw their parents use for 20, 30 years? What's your thesis on how you get people to adopt that?
Well, our thesis is just to be a great, profitable, innovative company, and then doing this $100 million roll up so that moms and pops, title companies in each state where we're entering, understand and see how amazing our process is. And then buyers and sellers are they're experiencing this easier process than realtors who are doing those transactions every single month. They then relate to their clients that that's the way to do closings. And it's a gradual process of just showing that the transaction could be simpler, more transparent, and faster. And since we have these rails to expand to all the states in the next 2 years, I think that's the way to go. And obviously have those conversations like today with you, because I believe that the next generation deserves this mobility when they will change their jobs or travel from one state to another state. I see the future where they will buy a home with just a couple of clicks. They will change their sell their previous home, buy another one. It will cost only 1% versus 10%. And it's without bureaucracy, in a trusted, secure way where they're not afraid of wire fraud or AI fake fraud. And it will be an easy decision for them to make.
Okay, so what that's the future, right? That's a
Yes.
wonderful vision. Today, if I were to use Proppy to buy or sell a home, how would it be fundamentally different than the traditional process? Like, what's the improvement that you have live today?
First of all, New York will be the last state we'll
Fair
enter
enough.
because of the closing attorneys and so on. The
Let's
majority
say
of states.
Miami. Let's say
Yeah,
Miami.
Miami. The majority of states are title company focused, not closing attorney states. So it makes our lives easier. The way we're different today is that our AI opens transactions on the weekends, in the evenings, anytime. In the moment you buy, you sign a purchase agreement, you drop it to our portal or to our email that our AI agent Avery checks constantly. Your transaction is opened right away. And then you, as a buyer, would receive an escrow link to send your deposit right away. There is no need of a check or calling anyone. You just receive welcome to your closing. We're ready to receive your $20,000 deposit. Click your connect online banking. It's all safe, no wire fraud risk. And then all the parties are notified. We have this record time on a transaction this year. We've got the deposit within 6 minutes after the purchase agreement signed on a weekend. And of course, all the
It's
parties are
genius.
amazed. It's happening. The deal is happening.
That's genius. Because I did notice in this transaction, there are parties involved that have very, very different time incentives. So, like, my broker, who's getting paid a commission, was pushing. Like, I knew she wanted to move at my pace because she didn't
Yes.
get paid until that commission closed. My real estate attorney, who like still shockingly cheap, by the way, Ron, in New York, it's amazing how like cheap. I was reminded, like, but there's a reason they're
Danger,
so
Will
cheap.
Robinson, lawyer, cheap.
There's a
Fascinating.
reason they're so cheap. They're doing 800 of the, and he was a great guy. Like I liked him a lot. I wanted to pay him more. I would have paid him three times much
Because
to.
most of the work is the same, from what I understand. It's a lot of
Yeah, that's
paralegals
right.
doing the work, and it's a model of as many transactions as you can get. It's a volume business, from what I understand.
It's actually the title and escrow business that makes the money, not the attorney review.
And so if Natalia, if you can replace those or supplement the elements of that transaction that are not as motivated to move fast and replace just those components, because they're the ones blocking things. They're the ones stalling them. The buyer wants to move, the seller wants to move, the brokers want to move. You know, the building, we'll see, that's difficult depending on the type of building. Sometimes the boards of the buildings are challenging. But it's these individuals in the middle that are just not motivated to move very fast, quite frankly. That's really, and I didn't think through that.
But it goes backward. They don't perceive the model as broken, because what are the alternatives? If there's no alternatives, you have a monopoly. And it happens in so many different sectors. But here's another question, because I'm on your website. That's why occasionally I'm averting my eyes. Are the prices on your website for the property, as far as you know, the same pricing or offering prices across the market? Because I wonder
Yeah,
whether people,
it's
yeah. The re the
MLS
reason I
data.
ask, because I wonder when TradFi hears about crypto, whether they assume, all right, we can jack it up because we're going to get a crypto bro to pay more. So that I want, I'm curious about if you have that stereotype.
Oh yes, oh yes, we have those requests all day long for the past 8 years. Can you sell my property? I'll accept crypto if you want, but I want a premium. Yeah, that's a norm, but we sometimes we have those breakthrough transactions where we transact a property entirely on chain. But we're very selective to a property that has a fair market price. But the majority of our listings, they're just MLS listings or listings we promote for our realtors that are our clients. But
So
yeah, to your
MLS,
point.
so what are MLS? You said MLS listing?
Yes. These are the realtor community governed
Okay.
multiple listings systems.
Got it.
They're
Okay.
normally one MLS per county or per cities. So there are about 800 MLSs in the country.
800
Then
different.
800
Yeah, they're
different
local.
MLSs. Yeah,
Yeah.
they're local, regional.
And they don't speak to each other?
No, but for example, there are aggregators, MLS aggregators, like Zillow
Okay.
is aggregating all the MLS data.
Got it.
But from a practical perspective, because I bought a second home several months ago, and the realtor, when we want to check out other areas, did not have a, I presume it's a subscription-based fee for MLS for the brokers, did not have access to MLS outside certain counties because the realtor was focused on the counties near where that realtor lives, and they were trying to coordinate with another broker in their organization to get access to MLS outside of the areas that they subscribe to. So yeah, it is fractionalized, and I don't really know how static or dynamic the data is, despite what's being told to the consumer.
Well, that's actually a system that I like in America. It does not exist in other countries where it's being changed this past year or two. There've been a lot of lawsuits in the space of brokerages and the National Association of Realtors. Now MLSs are being attacked. But this system provided transparency to everything that is on the market today in real estate, while in other countries, these are just portals. You pay, or you leave your listing with a brokerage, and only this brokerage have access to a listing. So I really like the transparency of the whole idea, and hopefully it will remain, but probably will be with slight changes.
One quick question. So if you have somebody in their early 20s looking to set out on their career path and real estate, they've got the real estate bug. They're you 5 years ago because you look so young. So anyway, You're welcome. Who's going to be hurt by this? What industries? Is it because I feel like the real estate broker has already been hurt with new rules coming out, with the modernization of technology and the commoditization of possibly their role, which I disagree with the commoditization. A good realtor really knows the properties, knows the areas, can give you insight, and it's valuable, at least for me it was. But who would be hurt? Who? What industries would you advise people saying your industry's that industry's going to go through some dynamic paradigm change?
Oh yes. It's a seismic change in the industry, not only due to innovation, but the lawsuits and the consumer awakeness. But Ron, you mentioned a very good combination of words, good realtors. So I think the good realtors, the professional ones, they will embrace this change, they will adapt, they will use the technology, they will use the most tech-driven vendors and title companies like ours and so on, and they will be able to close more transactions, maybe with less fees. We don't know that. For now, their commissions are not changed, actually. There is a more awareness to the consumer that they could negotiate, but the data suggests that, in fact, they receive almost the same commission. Or even higher. But then the part-time realtors, those most likely will leave the industry because there won't be a room for that, because the real estate market will have probably double, triple liquidity. If we're able to achieve this automation with lower fees overall, there will be more movement on the market where again, when new generation folks will move from one city to another, they're just buying properties because they want to feel the ownership. Is there equity there? Is there a saving there? So they will buy more, and realtors will make more money faster. They will close like every 3, 4 days instead of waiting for a 30-day of a closing.
Well, it goes back to
And
what
Ron, I'll
John
take
said. Yeah, but go on. Sorry, John.
Ron, I'll take the other side of that trade, though. I got to be honest. Like, so we had a great realtor. We had a realtor that my wife worked with. She became friends with. We looked last year, couldn't find anything, and my wife actually became friends with this woman, and she was great. And I thought she acted well, but she is inherently conflicted, right? She wants me to move because she wants that commission. So I see a world where an LLM who has access to all the MLS data that I can get to know, assuming the LLM can be trusted, assuming it's actually acting in my best interest, if I would be more honest with that LLM than I would be with that broker, even though I trust that broker, there's going to be, I was constantly worried about what information to give her because I know ultimately, not her fault, she's a lovely human being, but she makes a living off of consummating transactions. Where an LLM, I would give an LLM access to all my banking information, say, here's exactly how much I can afford, here's what I'm looking for. Go, I don't care if this place goes up in value, it's gonna be my primary. So, find me a place with low growth rates, but a safety. I would trust an LLM way more than a conflicted broker. And I think it's really dangerous for the brokerage industry because I don't know why anyone would trust a broker who's conflicted financially.
But can large language models have biases? You two are more into tech than I am. So when you say that, the first thing I'm saying is it's only as good as the data coming in and the people that are controlling the algorithms.
Natalia, I'll let you take this one. Yes, please.
Yes, that's why it's so important. Those who are building the technology, it has to be a diversity on the table because we're writing the future algorithms of our society. So yes, it the LLMs will remain conflicted for a long time. I don't know how it will be fixed, besides being open source, and again to have a very large diversity, like having all the industry participants and so on. But to your point of being conflicted, I think maybe the brokerage model has to change where there is an hourly payment of a consultant plus the commission, where you don't feel bad about requesting for local data that exists kind of more on a gossip level rather than a known truth that is already fed to LLM. Because when you are researching a neighborhood, there is a lot of information such as, oh, this neighbor and that neighbor, and I heard they're going to build this thing or this thing. And it's still in the permit stage with the county and not a public knowledge. So I'm not sure that LLMs will have this information per se. But then to your point, John, we're conflicted when buying a home and engaging with this beautiful home be human beings. And we feel like, okay, we've spent a whole year with them being friends and talking about what we want to buy and how we want to buy and going through the listings. And then obviously we kind of just have to close a transaction at some point
This
to
pressure, the
reward them.
social, yeah, the social, there's certainly social pressure, and
Yes.
you lose, and this is a long, involved relationship, and they're traveling with you, you're going around with them, right? You
Yeah.
develop this sort of weird human bond, and you constantly have to remind yourself this individual is motivated
Yeah.
to consummate a transaction, right? Now you want to do that transaction, you want to move, right? That's why you're doing this process. So ironically, it's the lawyer that I trusted the most, because the lawyer was only getting paid a few thousand dollars.
Why
And
is
he
that
didn't really
ironic, by the
care.
way? Why is
Very
that
ironic,
ironic?
Ron. Very ironic. No, but he was the one who I trusted when things would pop up. I would say, is this weird? Am I, should I be worried about this? And I trusted him the most. I figured he has no real, he doesn't care at the end of the day. If I'm one of 800 clients. So it's a really tough problem to tell that you're trying to solve. I want to spend the last couple minutes, if you don't mind, about you personally and your path as an entrepreneur. Ron, is that all right?
That's wonderful. That's the part I find even more
Yeah,
curious. That's why I
because
asked,
one of the things,
what was the aha moment?
So I've noticed about Natalia, just, you know, we met a long time ago, years ago, we did that interview in Miami. Thank you so much for inviting me down. And I've been following you, and I see you're very, very good at balancing the promotional aspect of your company without being overexposed. I think you do that really well. Kudos to you for that. That's hard to do.
Thank
It's
you.
hard to be promotional for your company without going over the top. So I guess my first question for you is, do you think it's helped or hurt you to be known as a blockchain company?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, sometimes there are years where we definitely capitalize on this blockchain innovator path, and sometimes I feel like it's been a curse. Even there is a recent transaction that we're closing with several folks, but then those who we really wanted to have on the table, they decided to walk away, even though they believe in the blockchain space. But there was like it's just this combination, this dance. Do you have enough crypto or not enough crypto? So frankly, I don't know, but I love the path that we took on from day one. And overcoming those challenges when there are crypto winters or there is more scrutiny to our industry, such as all those SEC lawsuits in the past. But at the same time, we have this conviction that smart contracts is the best technology for settlement, and it's here to stay for real estate and for property. So I wouldn't change my mind just for the sake of what the market condition is today. But yeah,
But it's become an infrastructure layer as opposed to, that kind of makes sense to me, right? I mean, like, I don't see a world in our lifetime where total global value as a percentage, where crypto, I mean, best case scenario, it's 10%, right? Maybe I'm crazy here, but I work at Coinbase. I hope it grows for it faster. But I think the reality is for the foreseeable future, the majority of collateral that will be used to secure a loan for a home, the mechanism to pay for a home is going to be predominantly fiat. And if you just define yourself as a crypto blockchain financing vehicle for home ownership, you're going to be really nuanced, right?
You're right. And now that we're doing this roll-up strategy, we're only talking about our AI invention and our AI Avery, and less so about blockchain and cryptocurrency because moms and pops, they don't have those crypto transactions. The Florida market in California, yes, we have probably 10 to 15% of transactions in crypto. Sometimes in July, one of our clients had 80% of transactions in crypto in USDC, which was surprising to us. But to your point, yeah, maybe it will be 10%, maybe 20% of usage of crypto, a hybrid usage. I don't say the whole transaction will be in crypto, But in a hybrid scenario where the new generation, they have cryptocurrency, and yeah, they want to use it to buy a home.
Can I ask one question,
Sure.
John? Yeah, so in connection with the volatility of the value of crypto, are you finding that, how does that affect, if at all, any of the value of the property or the quid pro quo? Because it occur, like, in other words, if somebody's saying Bitcoin's trading high, most of the people, I believe, who are whales, their goal is to not exit crypto and not exit Bitcoin and hold on to it because that is how it sustains its value. But are you finding that sometimes people think it's hitting the high and they're trying to exit crypto and invest the money instead in more traditional assets? And that's driving
Well,
activity.
I'm not sure I can answer your question because I don't deal with our buyers day to day. My escrow team does, and our sales team does. So I'm not sure about the motivation of when to buy and how, but we do account for the volatility on the market. So if the closing is longer and we have to keep Bitcoin, we have a buffer. So we ask them for more Bitcoin to be held in escrow account. But also when I'm mentioning the crypto transactions, I also refer to stable coin. So this client, for example, with 80% of sales, it was a pure stable coin purchase from 10 different clients. Then there are international clients that appeared that are buying in stable coins. Yeah, so it's interesting. 2025 was definitely an increase of transactions in crypto. But Ron, again, to your point, now that the price are down, we have less transactions happening
So
in crypto.
Natalia, I love, I'm curious about the roll-up strategy. Do you disclose where the financing is coming from? Like, have you had, do you disclose who the
Not
backer
yet.
is? Not
Not
yet.
yet.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. My phone's ringing. Very unprofessional. Can I
No, no, it
ask,
shows you're in demand, John. I take it the other way. It's all a function of how you present the data.
can I just ask, Natalia, is it coming from traditional finance or is it coming from the crypto world?
It's a mix. It's a mix, and I can't wait to share more in a month or two. Yeah, but it's again, the
That's
crypto
great.
industry got to this point where it's being accepted. In the past, it was a hurdle for us to talk to traditional industry players. Now, almost the most traditional and conservative players in America are accepting the fact that not only we innovate in blockchain and we use smart contracts and we have treasury in cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, but we also issued a token. Even that is being acceptable after all those regulations in 2025.
And you're talking about whether crypto is a security, those regulations from the SEC and the SEC, because you mentioned also in one of your responses some sense of exposure to the SEC, and it was presumed by what you said, how the SEC has changed its focus from prosecuting the definition of a security by no longer prosecuting actively traditional issuers of crypto.
Yes, that's correct. So, one aspect of the uncertainty and the lack of clarity on how we define tokens, which in our case the
John,
token is
here's a
utility,
reminder.
but we didn't have the ultimate transparency. But what I'm referring to, talking to those traditional players, is overall, if you have a crypto component, a year or two ago, it would be a no-go in the first conversation.
Then my interaction to some degree with real estate and crypto, and it's increasing with every cycle, is people launching SPVs, tokenizing them, but the contracts that can be enforced are off chain. Does that come up at all with regard to what you're doing and integrating that all into an electronic form?
I think that overall, it's not a big problem of a digital and crypto component to have to be tied to paperwork and regulation and so on. Even when we buy Bitcoin, we buy it on Coinbase, we sign the terms and conditions. Almost every single transaction now today in cryptocurrency has the background paperwork, whether you just click terms and conditions agreed or not, it's an agreement you're signing. So
Right.
the
But
same, yeah.
that's assuming you want the security of using a centralized intermediary, right? If you want to go peer-to-peer, then that all goes away. But there's a cost
True.
associated. There's a literal and a sort of friction that exists if you want someone to act as a guide or a guarantor of that transaction.
Yes, that's true. But John, I don't know if you have the statistics or not, but it feels like in the past 2 years, everything that is moving to blockchain is not truly decentralized and peer-to-peer in terms of holding Bitcoin or a cryptocurrency in a cold wallet, but rather all those tokenized T-bills, all those
Yes.
funds, and now BTC ETFs. I would
That's
say
right.
probably, I don't know, it's more than a half of cryptocurrency related investments are with this guard or
And
semi-centralized.
that'll probably increase because if you think about kind of
Yes.
the early days of crypto, where the crypto natives, they were both technically proficient enough to be comfortable with that self-storage. Quite frankly, the whole industry was built as sort of a rebellion against centralized intermediaries like governments. As they become a smaller percentage of crypto ownership, as more normies, if you will, start to embrace digital assets, it's very likely the vast majority of them will use some type of centralized intermediary. A, because they won't be as comfortable with technology, and B, because they just don't. I keep telling these people, like, they don't want to think about it. They don't. They most people don't want to
Exactly.
wake up thinking about their money all the time. I bring out this point all the time. The average American's net worth can be taken out of the bank in $100 bills, and it would represent a brick about 6.5 pounds. That's no more than 18 by 18 inches. That's the average American's net worth. So
Wait,
everyone
what
can
is that amount in
self-store.
dollars? Just because I'm curious.
About
Yeah.
217,000, depending on, and that's average, not median, includes
Yeah.
just roughly. But let's even say it's 400,000. That's not a lot of cash. That's not a physically, we could all take it out tomorrow and store it under our mattress. Like everybody could self-store all of their money tomorrow. The reason people don't is security, safety, not
Yes.
wanting headaches, put aside interest and earning. Like the average person just doesn't want to think about this stuff.
Exactly.
And that doesn't mean they're dumb. It doesn't mean they're lazy. It just means they want to spend time with their kids or their hobbies or or other things, right? So I think as more and more people embrace crypto, what I don't think is going to change is the will of those people to not have to worry that their hard ledger got misplaced or the battery ran out or it ran under a magnet or whatever.
Totally agree. And I
What
can
also
give an
sells
example.
is the horror stories of the people that lost their crypto, like the guy that's been searching
Exactly.
through the garbage dump
Yeah.
for his drive.
I remember
That's
this
amazing.
case too.
Yeah. So
But to your
to tell you,
point, yeah.
yes, so please, Scott, I want to give you the last word before we close out.
Just a quick
Yeah.
example of where the blockchain rails really work. Yes, there are terms and conditions and this agreement, but it's still the rails, the underlying infrastructure that makes those transactions secure. So for Bitcoin and buying a Bitcoin through Coinbase, we understand this example. It's just easier. With real estate, we did those several transactions where a user could connect their wallet, transfer stablecoin USDC, click terms and conditions. I agreed to buy this home. I've seen the inspections, and I want to be a home buyer. And they become a home buyer instantly. And it's recorded the
Yeah.
county, and you now have the ownership in your wallet. So it's doable. And that's what I believe for
That's
I la yeah.
definitely
So
doable.
that's the
That we
blockchain
used to mail
rails.
paper stock certificates to each other, right? I mean, all these systems were incredibly manual at one point. It is interesting real estate's moved so slowly.
By the way, Dick Fuld told me the story once. They used to go down to the exchanges or to whoever the clearing firms were and actually manually do by hand. So when talking about deliver, it used to be the job from what I can gather at the end of each person's day. But one other question I have, John, real quick, sorry. It's the municipalities.
I'm going to leave you, Ron. I'm going to leave you. I have a unfortunately, I have to. I have a I lost my passport, and if I don't go, and then, speaking of inefficient systems, If I'm not at the post office in 15 minutes, I will not be able to make my next trip in a month.
Oh
So
my God.
Natalia, when you're done solving real estate, please move on to passports.
That's
So
a big one.
I'm gonna leave you in the hands of my capable co-host Ron to ask you a
No,
final question. But Ron,
we'll sign off.
I do have to run.
We will sign off.
So
Well, John, we'll sign off. But the question I had, but you don't obviously have time to answer, is doesn't it require modernization of local government as well for the system ultimately to be click and execute? But
let Natalia answer that. I don't need to be here. This is an informal podcast. Let her answer. That's a great question. She should have the final word. So Natalia, I'm going to say goodbye. Answer that
thank you,
question.
John.
Finish up with Ron. Thanks everyone for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, John. Happy holidays.
Cheers.
Good to see you. Bye-bye.
But yeah, I was sort of curious because this is a really fascinating subject and you're in an amazing industry. So first, congrats, but does it require modernization of other platforms like on the government side?
No, it does not require, we don't have any kind of friction. So it does not require any policy changing or any government upgrades. However, having said that, we'd love to see the government registry system to be upgraded, that those county systems could move to blockchain. It could be just one registry secure blockchain, and then the counties would just receive this information so that they can collect taxes. They could even automate the way they collect property taxes. So it would be a great addition to our innovation, but it's not something we're dependable on, luckily.
Understood. Well, listen, it's not the same podcast without my co-host. So I want to thank you for the holiday surprises we've experienced today. And like I said, we really, both John and I truly appreciate your participating on our podcast. And we hope to have you back to hear about your future successes. And wishing everybody who's listening, happy holiday, happy new year. It's December 23rd as of this moment. And thank you so much, Natalia.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And I wish everyone happy holidays. I wish all your homes to be happy, families to be happy. And if you're planning to buy a home next year, wish you a very smooth transaction and find your dream home.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, everybody.